This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you tonight. It looks as though I left Louisiana the other day just in time yesterday morning because the storm is hitting the Gulf Coast right now. And last night, the Georgia special election did not exactly go the way the Democrats had hoped it would go. You remember all those Democrats who in the last couple of weeks have been saying, why this special election? It's a litmus test on Donald Trump. Well, thank you for telling us that, Democrats, because I would agree. It's a litmus test. America wants what Donald Trump promised, and the Republicans better start delivering, and the Democrats best get out of the way. For Republicans, it continues the theme that Americans are backing what the president has been doing. A member of the Republican National Committee joins me tonight to talk about what the win last night means for the party and America's feelings toward the president. The DNC did not ask for Homeland Security's help when they knew of Russian hackers attacking their system. It seems they might have been trying to hide information they didn't want the FBI to see, and we'll give you details on that. And why did former FBI Director James Comey take classified documents from the FBI unlawfully? Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch joins me tonight to talk about this potential violation of federal law. And the CEO of one of the country's largest ride-sharing companies has resigned. Is this a move in the right direction for Uber? We'll talk about that, too. And please make sure to cast your vote in my quick poll. We put up a brand new question every night. And our question tonight, was the attack last week at the GOP baseball practice an act of political terrorism? You can answer that question at LarsLarson.com. And it's brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens, the kind of conservative values I believe in at AMAC. Just go to amac.us to join. AMAC is better, better for you and better for America as well. And while you're on the website, visit my trophy room at LarsLarson.com. Post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing trip for a chance to win some fantastic prizes. If you'd like to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Follow on Facebook, The Lars Larson Show, and Twitter, Lars Larson Show. And if you want to do the podcast, check it out on SoundCloud at The Lars Larson Podcast or on iTunes Radio. Now, why didn't the DNC want Homeland Security's help when they learned about Russian hackers infiltrating their email system? The testimony from former Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson. Remember, this is Obama's guy at Homeland Security until the new administration came in. He had he'd expressed real concern about the Democrats and the fact that they knew they had been hacked, and he wanted to help them find out why they had been hacked. But guess what? The Democrats did not want to cooperate.
I think it was unprecedented, the scale and the scope of what we saw them doing. And you know, there had very clearly been intrusions before by a number of state actors, as I'm sure you're aware. You know, in retrospect, it would be easy for me to say that I should have bought a sleeping bag and camped out in front of the DNC in late summer with the benefit of hindsight. I can tell you for certain that in the late summer, fall, I was very concerned about what I was seeing. Can you?
Now, here's what's crazy about this. During this questioning, this is the former head of Homeland Security, appointed by a Democrat president, who said, I wanted to help them solve the problem. And they had had the problem before at an organization, OPM, Office of Personnel Management. You remember when that was hacked and all that information was obtained from the federal government? But that's a federal government agency. The DNC, the Democrat National Committee, is not a government agency. It's a private political party. And yet, they didn't want the help that Homeland Security and the FBI were offering.
Elaborate more on what the DHS's connection with the DNC was, or consultation with the DNC was after you became aware of the hacking, and they became aware of the hacking.
As Peter King.
As to what was offered them, what they accepted. Was there any level of cooperation at all?
To my disappointment, not to my knowledge, sir. And this is a question I asked repeatedly when I first learned of it. You know, what are we doing? Are we in there? Are we helping them discover the vulnerabilities? Because this was fresh off the OPM experience. And there was a point at which DHS cybersecurity experts did get into OPM and actually help them discover the bad actors and patch some of the exfiltrations, or at least minimize some of the damage. And so I was anxious to know whether or not our folks were in there. And the response I got was FBI had spoken to them. They don't want our help. They have CrowdStrike.
Now, this is what's amazing to me, although I think there's a very easy explanation. Why would it be that if the Democrat National Committee has had its email systems hacked, they've got a foreign state actor, in this case Russia, inside their email systems, and they don't want any help to try to figure out how they got in, how to close the holes, how to minimize the loss of data? They didn't want any of that. And I think the very easy explanation is this. The Democrats knew that they had been cheating a member of their own party, in this case, Bernie Sanders. Candidate Bernie Sanders did extraordinarily well for somebody who, while not a political nobody, most of America had no idea who he was before the presidential campaign, where he jumped in with both feet and got an amazing amount of support from literally tens of millions of Americans. Now, I don't happen to be a Bernie Sanders fan, but for those folks who are Bernie Sanders fans, the idea that this man could run a race, and a very effective one, and one that came close against an old political hand like Hillary Clinton, who was, you know, she rightly supposed that she had it locked, that she was going to get the nomination. And she thought she was going to go right on to a very good victory last November. It didn't happen. But part of the reason it didn't happen is that Bernie Sanders got cheated by his own political party. So I suspect the reason the DNC did not want the FBI in looking at how that information got out was because they were going to see in that information that Bernie Sanders had been cheated by his own political party. And even with Jay Johnson in charge of Homeland Security, the DNC couldn't afford that.
The cybersecurity firm. And that was the answer I got after I asked the question a number of times over the progression of time.
Now, that was, I assume, totally different from the reaction you got from OPM.
The OPM effort, we were actually in there on site helping them find the bad actors.
Do you know who it was at the DNC who made that decision or who was making the resistance?
No.
I would just say, maybe it's editorializing my part, that really is, to me, an unusual response by the DNC. I mean, if you're talking about presidential election, you have an unprecedented amount of cyber hacking by a foreign power, an adversary from my point of view, and that they would not accept all the help that could possibly be given, especially, I mean, it's not as if, not that you would be partisan or anyone else, but it's not even like it was a Republican administration trying to intrude into the DNC. This is a impartial governmental entity, FBI, DHS, and they didn't accept it. I just find it very hard to, you know, to comprehend.
Well, my interest in helping them was definitely a nonpartisan interest.
I know that,
And I recall very clearly that I was not pleased that we were not in there helping them patch this vulnerability.
Absolutely right. But can somebody come up with a better theory than my theory that the reason the DNC didn't even want a Democrat administration inside looking around at what had been stolen and how it had been stolen was that they didn't want the political damage that would come when people found out, as we found out anyway, that the DNC itself had cheated Bernie Sanders out of a legitimate shot at the nomination. Coming up in a moment, the Georgia 6th Congressional District special election went to Republican Karen Handel last night, a real confirmation of Donald Trump's policies. We'll talk about that next and get your phone calls and emails on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you on a Wednesday evening. And thanks again to my friends down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, our great affiliate WBRP, for being so hospitable for our special broadcast on Monday and a little event that we had on Monday morning that involved some of the great local hosts there, like Bill Profita, who you've heard on this program before, Clarence Bugs, and of course, Kevin Gallagher. And always glad to work with our friends down there, Gordy Rush and everybody else. Hey, you know, when I look at Georgia, and I may hear completely differently from the next young lady who's coming up, but I look at this situation, and I was so glad that the Democrats had declared this the fourth special election held since Donald Trump took office to replace positions that where a member of Congress had then become a member of the administration. I was so glad to see this because an open seat in a place that was typically Republican, but in a district that Donald Trump only just barely won in Georgia. And the Democrats threw everything and the kitchen sink at it, a total spending of $50 million, with $30 million and some odd of that going to John Ossoff, and only $20 million or so going to the Republican Karen Handel, which leaves us all laughing our ass off tonight because the Democrats lost and the Republican won. And on that note, Ronna Romney McDaniel joins me now, the chair of the Republican National Committee. Ms. McDaniel, thanks very much tonight, and thanks for coming back on the show.
Well, thrilled to be here. I love your intro.
Well, am I right in saying this was a litmus test, and it turns out that the test came up with the right result?
Yeah, absolutely. The funny thing is with the Democrats right now, every one of these specials is a referendum on the president, and then when they win, they don't like to look at the results and say, you know what, the voters are saying they like what the president's saying. They do want to see Obamacare repealed and replaced. They do want to see tax reform. But the Democrats don't seem to get the message that they want action being taken here in Washington. And they keep sticking to this resist, obstruct message. It hasn't done very well for them so far.
Well, they also ran a candidate that, while I don't admire his politics, there was a strategy or a tactic that was used. Maybe it's better described as a tactic of running somebody with no record in politics, which means that running against him, Karen Handel couldn't say, look how he voted on taxes or look how he voted on other things, because he didn't have that kind of background. And so he was able to go out and say things that in many cases his speeches could have been just about given by Republicans because they were right down the middle. Although his politics, based on who he was getting money from the left and the right coast, seemed to be far to the left, and he was able to conceal that in the hopes of winning.
Yeah, you nailed it, Lars. It's exactly right. John Ossoff ran as a moderate. He said, I'm going to go to Washington and I won't cut taxes. I'll work with Republicans. And he was trying to get those moderate Republicans and independent voters. And in the background, he was in lockstep with Nancy Pelosi. His money was coming from California and New York. He was palling around with Hollywood. And the voters of Georgia saw through it. But he did try to sneak through, and it's a credit to those people in Georgia who looked for someone who's going to represent them and their interests in Washington, D.C., and not be a 54th congressman for California.
You know, Ronna, I'm Ms. McDaniel, one of the things about this that I find kind of refreshing for us is we can now point to this and say, this is where you Democrats don't get it. You take a man who doesn't even live inside the district he was running for. He described it as walking distance away. Well, I guess if a two-hour walk is walking distance away from where you actually live. But it just strikes me, they still don't get that they have a real disconnect from the public. They tried to run Hillary Clinton as just your average mom who didn't know that you didn't wipe computer servers with a cloth and that she was just an average person worth $150 million who has been in the elite circles, you know, in politics and other places for decade after decade, and they thought she could connect with average Americans. They run a guy who doesn't even run in the district and, as you say, takes, I think, 90-some percent of his donations from outside of Georgia, and then thinks he can connect with the average folks in Georgia and represent them, it still suggests that the party has a serious disconnect from the people it claims to represent.
Yeah, they've really never done an audit of why they lost in November, and they continue to make the same mistakes that they made when they lost the presidency, and I'm fine with that. They can go out and keep making those mistakes, but I certainly saw it in Michigan when Hillary Clinton finally paid attention to our state in the latter days of the election. She ran a campaign completely against Donald Trump. Everything was against him and trying to frame him, and she never put forward a vision. And that's what the Democrats have been doing, resist, obstruct, there's no vision. Republicans are running on a vision. They're talking about bringing jobs and wages and national security and fixing health care, repealing, replacing Obamacare. When you run on a vision, voters are going to be drawn to that. And Democrats still have not figured out how to put a message forward that resonates with the middle class and the working families of America. And I'm fine with that. I'm fine if they never figure that out, because Republicans are doing that.
I'm talking to Ronna Romney McDaniel, who's the chair of the Republican National Committee. Now, there's one other group, Ronna, and I don't want you to take this too personally. There's one other group that I would like to see get a message out of this. And this would be members of the party, of which you are head, you're the chair, who seem to also not like the president's agenda very much. I could put names like Ryan and McConnell on it, but I want them to get the message that Americans want this to get done, and I want them to shift into high gear. I think I speak for a number of Republicans. I'm a conservative first and a Republican second, but we'd like to see the Republicans get with the program as well. Is that unfair?
No, we have to rally around our president and his agenda. That is what the voters of this country want. They want to see that from Republicans in Washington. They sent a clear message. They want change in Washington. They want to see action. And when they don't see Republicans rallying around the president, they're going to get frustrated if we can't fulfill these campaign promises. That's the one thing the Democrats do well. They rally around their leaders sometimes, even when they're leading them in the wrong direction. But we've got to rally around President Trump and help him accomplish his agenda, or our voters are going to hold us accountable in 2018.
So what's the thing that all of us as voters and citizens need to do to get the Republicans to get behind this? Because I have to tell you, ma'am, one of my biggest disappointments, my faith in Paul Ryan over the years has just fallen, long distances. But when he came out and after 17 days of trying to craft a piece of legislation that I think he had about 6 years to work on that would actually replace Obamacare, he declared 17 days later, well, our effort has failed and we're stuck with Obamacare for the foreseeable future. It wasn't even, hey, coach, we'll go out and try better, next week or next month. It was, we're stuck with it. And I thought that was a loser's approach to this problem, and I want to see that change. They're promising a vote in August of some kind. I'd love to see McConnell and Ryan both say, we're staying in D.C., heat of August or not, until the work of the people gets done.
Well, I'm optimistic based on what I'm seeing. The Senate's going to release their version of the repeal and replace tomorrow. I've spoken with the Senate. The vice president's engaged. The president's engaged. We all recognize that we have a time frame with which we can get things done, or we're going to actually help the American people. This isn't about winning elections right now. This is about Anthem pulling out of Ohio and Indiana today, and it's about 40% of our country in 2018 that's only going to have one insurer in their states, which means that they can increase the premiums even more. People are hurting, and they're looking to Republicans to help them. We have to get this done. It is an urgent need. Democrats have decided not to help. It'd be great if they would help, because we should be putting the American people first right now. Our leaders, I'm optimistic, recognize this. These special elections have reinforced the solidarity of our base behind our president. And we have got to get things done legislatively if we're going to continue to have the majorities that we enjoy right now.
Ms. McDaniel, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you so much.
You bet. That's Ronna Romney McDaniel, the chair of the RNC. Coming up in a moment, former FBI Director James Comey might be involved in his own document scandal. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone call shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Let me put up a naysayer, because we love to talk to naysayers first. Derek, welcome to the program. Where do you and I disagree on something?
Well, it's not that we necessarily disagree. I was more. I was actually kind of curious what you felt about the Philando Castile situation.
I think that the jury looked at what had happened. I think they looked at all the tape, not just the tape that was made by his girlfriend after the police officer shot, but also what had happened prior to that. And I think they decided that the police officer had committed no crime because he had acted based on the information he had at the time. That's the bottom line of that. Hold on the line, and I'll get back to you shortly. Tom Fitton joins me now, who's the president of Judicial Watch, who's going after some really important documents where we actually have proof. We know for a fact that the man removed the documents illegally from the federal government. Tom, welcome back to the program, and describe for us the documents that Judicial Watch would like to see the FBI recover for the American people.
Well, this is an issue for the former FBI director, James Comey, who took, he's been touting the memos that he wrote about his meetings and calls with President Trump. Well, in fact, when he took those memos, those were FBI documents, he shouldn't have taken them. And we wrote a letter to the FBI saying, hey, look, you know, he took these records. They looked to be government records. And when the FBI or other government agencies know that records have gone missing improperly, you're supposed to notify the National Archivist, which is the federal official responsible for federal records, and initiate action with the Justice Department. And I tell you, if they don't, we plan to file a lawsuit.
Tom, is there a timeline under which they have to make those notifications, and is there any evidence that they have made those notifications?
No, there isn't, and we expect if we don't hear more or less by the end of the month, we'll have to move to federal court on this. You know, we had to do the same thing with Hillary Clinton's emails. It's incredible. We've got the FBI director pulling a Hillary Clinton on us.
Well, tell me this, because I know that some people, I'm not a lawyer, and most of my audience is not made up of lawyers, thank goodness.
I'm not a lawyer either, so I hope I'm conveying it.
Well, except I understand, I mean, to some extent, I appreciate the fact that James Comey admitted his motivation for creating these memos in which, I mean, I tried to put myself in the same spot. If I went to work, let's say, or a new boss came in where I worked and I said, I don't trust this guy at all. I don't like this guy. I don't trust this guy. And every time I meet with him, I'm going to document every single thing he says and every single thing I say. That would be my defensive action if I were thrust into a situation where I didn't trust somebody. Now, this man agreed to be FBI director for whoever happened to be president of the United States. So he can distrust him, but he's the guy who took on the job. And if he honestly believed that Donald Trump was a man he could trust that little, maybe what he should have done was tender his resignation and say, I can't work for this man. But instead, he said, I'm going to document every single thing that he says because I don't trust him and I think he's going to lie to me. Okay, he's admitted his motivation, which also tells us how he might approach the job working for a government headed by a man that he doesn't trust. But having decided that does not mean that the memos he wrote are not public records, right?
Exactly, and that's the big issue. Where are these public records? Why are they being withheld from the American people? And does the FBI have them? And, you know, are these the only records he took with him? I don't know if that's the case or not.
No.
But, you know, his arrogance is astonishing in that regard. And, you know, his buddies are still at the FBI leadership. And, you know, I don't know if they'd let him walk away with this material. And it's going to be, I'm sure, a fight just to make them enforce the rule of law here, even ask the tough questions that we're asking.
Well, Tom, the other question that I think all of us have been wondering about who look at this critically is if this is the man who leaked, has admitted, confessed under oath that he leaked documents to media in an attempt to influence the actions of the government he was ostensibly working for, what other documents might he have leaked? Because when you say we don't know if this is the only ones he took with him, we don't. And we don't know whether, as the head of the FBI, with, I'm sure, extraordinary access to documents of all kinds, if he wasn't the very source of the leaks that that have come out that have been so damaging for the Trump administration over the last few months.
Well, we know he admitted to one leak, and he seemed to know what he was doing when he did that. And you have to wonder if it came up in another situation and he's responsible for additional leaks. Mr. Comey has got to be the subject of some independent investigation or serious investigation by the Fed, and that's why we're trying to initiate this, at least.
Do you think
the records back?
Do you think there's any question but that he knew the proper rules and regulations that applied to everything he put down on paper about meetings with the president?
Yeah, I think he knew or should have known. And you know what, in many ways, it doesn't matter if for the purposes of the government going to get the records. I mean, if they want to prosecute him for taking records he shouldn't have taken, maybe it does matter. But in terms of what the government is obligated to do in terms of getting these records, they just need to get them.
Well, and let me ask you this then. Given that, you know, whether he knew about it or didn't know about it, the government has an obligation to try to secure these. Do you think the reason that we're not seeing some affirmation that they have gone after the records is that, as you say, some of the top leadership who are loyal, perhaps, to James Comey are the ones who are making the judgment calls about whether or not they go after these records or not? Because...
The acting director, Mr. McCabe, was and is obviously the top deputy under Mr. Comey for years. Mr. Mueller, who is now the special counsel of the Justice Department, who might have purview here as well. It's his protege, reports are to be believed. And the Justice Department is largely run by longtime bureaucrats, and there are just few political appointees over there. So Comey has a lot of friends.
Well, is it appropriate then for somebody like Attorney General Sessions or one of his deputies to call McCabe in and say, listen, are you going after these records to, resecure them and put them back where they belong or not? And if not, who is the appropriate person to ask that question down, from the top of the chain of command down?
Yeah, you would think that, Mr. Sessions has recused himself from Russia-related questions. Maybe this is covered by that. I don't know. But certainly the number two or the number three, whatever the responsible official is, they need to do it. The FBI needs to take action and initiate action with the Justice Department. Hopefully they follow up. And, these are just records we want to be available to the American people so that they're reviewed and made public as appropriate. And when you have a public official like Mr. Comey testifying under oath, he created these records and took them with him and then leaked them to the media, it seems to me a no-brainer that there needs to be some more questions asked about what he took and what else he might have took.
Tom, thanks for doing the great work that you do at Judicial Watch. It's very important to all of us, and we've always valued it, and we can't thank you enough.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. Thank you.
You bet. Tom Fitton, the president of Judicial Watch, they may have to file a lawsuit to get some of these documents back. Documents created by the former head of the FBI, documents removed from the FBI, documents supplied secretly to reporters with a deliberate intention of doing damage to the sitting president of the United States. Hey, Relief Factor is a 100% research-based formula. I take it every single day. And the fact is, while I don't have a lot of aches and pains, after a year of yard work, sometimes it seems like a year on some weekends, I certainly feel a whole lot better. It addresses aches and pains from exercise, overexertion, aging, and just everyday living. Mark writes in from Washington, I had severely hurt my back a couple of times with pain and numbness in my leg. The regular solutions upset my stomach. I was desperate for some relief. Relief Factor was easy to use, it works, and it's been a blessing. My pain level went from unbearable to minimal. Well, pain affects 100 million Americans that same way. Exercise-related pain or general muscle aches and pains. And Relief Factor works. It works for me. The three-week quick start, $19.95, about 95 cents a day, less than the cost of a cup of coffee every day. For pain relief, visit ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com or 800-500-8384. That's 800-500-8384. Coming up in a moment, your phone calls, your emails, and we'll be joined by the spokeswoman for the Committee to Defend the President, Scotty Nell Hughes, on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you. I'll be glad to get back to your calls here in a moment. From our Facebook page, so the results are in, 51% to 49%, and Republicans retain the Georgia seat. My question is, how much of that 49% of the Democrat Party was bussed in from out of state? And our best email of the day, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Lars, the Democrats are beginning to look like the Chicago Cubs of the prior century before last year's win. Here's a quick Trump meme to celebrate our latest conservative win in Georgia. Oh, by the way, this was top billing front page stuff leading up to the election in Georgia, predicting a 7-point victory on CNN. Today, the story is not even visible on their front page. Looking forward to the show. Thank you very much, Ryan. I appreciate that. And on that note, I welcome my old friend, Scotty Nell Hughes, the national spokeswoman for the Committee to Defend the President. How you doing, Scotty?
I am doing fantastic, Lars. And, you know, going into, you're correct, going into last night, the narrative was, oh, look, how can you, if you, someone would have even thought that a Democrat could win in red state Georgia, that alone is already a win for the Democrats. Well, you're hearing silence right now out of them, as not only did they have a faulty candidate with someone that your granddaughter, I think, has more of a political resume than that candidate did, as well as living within the district. I mean, your granddaughter also had the same qualifications of not being able to vote in that district as his candidate did. And yet Democrats felt, once again, that they could buy the voter off with $20 million thrown in to that district. And are they going to do that? Is that going to be their strategy for 2018? Because that's what they did with Hillary. And they proved last night they have not learned their lesson.
And by the way, on direct, on indirect spending and direct spending together, he outspent her by about $9 million, about 30-some-odd million to 20-some-odd million. On direct spending by the candidate, he outspent her 4-1 and still could not pull it off. And I've pointed out to people, this is a district that Donald Trump narrowly won in the 2016 election. So this was not, you know, if you're imagining this Georgia district, this congressional district 6 as a strong Trump territory, it was not. The president barely eked out a victory there, and yet Karen Handel hung on to it, and she didn't have to distance herself from the president of the United States. She embraced him like most of the winners of the last 12 months. The ones who embrace Trump win, and the ones who distance themselves from Trump, in my own neck of the woods, lose.
Well, but here is the one lesson that I think we should learn as Republicans, because I do believe we should take something away from every campaign. The fact that it was close or going into it, or the Democrats felt like they had a chance to win it, was a clear message. And we saw what the tactics of the old-fashioned establishment Republican Party was going to be, that if she would have lost yesterday, as was being once again predicted by the Democrats, the casket was going to be placed on the lawn of the White House and not where it rightfully deserved, which would have been the leadership of the United States Congress and the Republican leadership. I think the message that Republicans needed to learn who are in Congress right now after watching the results of last night is that those folks really do not care about this ongoing witch hunt that Russia is doing. What they want to see is some activity out of what has become a very stagnant Congress, and they want to see bills sent from the House to the Senate to the president's desk for him to either sign or veto. But they are tired of this, where all of our focus right now is on Russia rather than where it needs to be, which is helping Main Street America and fulfilling the campaign promises from Trump 2016.
I'm talking to Scotty Nell Hughes, who's the national spokeswoman for the Committee to Defend the President. On that note, let me ask you this. I've been saying this for the, you know, for the last several months, and that is, we're now 12 months into the first, since the first investigation of this Russia connection alleged out there. Everyone who's anyone admits there is no evidence to be found whatsoever. Dianne Feinstein has admitted that. James Clapper admitted that. James Comey admitted that. And yet, why am I not hearing Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, and other major figures in the House and Senate leadership out there saying, there's no evidence, there's nothing there to investigate? Meanwhile, Robert Mueller is being allowed to go out and hire a bunch of Clinton hack attorneys who clearly have a dog in the fight, or Clinton donor attorneys in some cases, but some of them who literally worked for the foundation. And they don't see the political stink, the conflict of interest in that?
Well, and that's the thing. Republicans could shut this investigation down, and not because they're trying to hide something or cover up something, but because of the Republican leadership in Congress. No, there is nothing there. And yet they're allowing more sparks, more wood to be put into this makeup fire, campfire that Democrats are using to found a flame for the 2018 campaign and to discredit this White House. And Republicans are allowing it to happen. Nothing. There are no body bags that have to do with Russia. There are no people. Your bank account and my bank account was not affected because of Russia. And I hate to break it to the Democrats. Not a single vote was swayed because of anything Russia did. As much as they want to blame it on supposed hackers in the basement of the Kremlin, that could be 18-year-old boys. Who knows? But that is not what change the election. That's not what put the election for President Trump. And if we really wanted to see a serious investigation in it, then fine. Let's ask Comey, why did you not actually take over the emails and the servers of the DNC that were supposedly hacked by the Russians? Why did you never ask to investigate those and read into what those emails? Why did we have to actually read them on WikiLeaks? Why did you not do it? And then also, why did you refuse to look into the own leaks coming from your department when you were asked by Trey Gowdy under oath? There is a lot of cloud of corruption and scandal, but it's not on our side. And I'm beginning to think, Lars, the reason why the Democrats are creating this brouhaha is because they know there is a good possibility the skeletons they've worked so hard to bury from the last 8 years could very easily start to come to the surface. And they want to make sure that they keep a distract, so that we don't really start digging for the real bodies that have affected the American infrastructure, like what we've seen from the progressive agenda of the Obama administration.
Very nicely put. Scotty Nell Hughes, the spokeswoman for the Committee to Defend the President. Scotty, thank you so much. Let's go to Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Lars, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I truly appreciate it.
Sure.
Hey, in the last break, you were talking to the person about the Comey leaks and this and that, and you suggested, well, maybe Comey was at the root of all of the leaks that have been so, what's a good word?
Damaging.
Damaging to the Trump campaign.
Right.
Now, it seems like all of the leaks that have been investigated, Trump has turned around to exonerate him.
Yes, the damage comes from this. It distracts from getting the job done. The work that should be going on Capitol Hill, the president pushing his agenda, tax cuts, reforming Obamacare, getting the wall built, enforcing the law, all of this takes away from it. And anyone who's ever been the subject of a lawsuit, who's, you know, or other kinds of problems like this, can appreciate that. It distracts you from the task that you're all about. And if you do that to this president, the Democrats are getting exactly what they want out of it. They know there's nothing to be found there, but they want to keep the distraction up, because the longer they distract, the less of President Trump's work gets done, the things he promised to American voters. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.